The last decade has seen both a revolution and an evolution in the way we play and interact with video games. The maturing video game industry now rivals Hollywood in terms of profit and creative expression, as technology and computing power has brought richer environments and more sophisticated storytelling to an industry that was once arcade-bound. The music for video games has changed dramatically as well. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. My guests today are film composers David and Ben Stanton, who increasingly are writing and producing music for not just films, but video games. Welcome back to the program, you two.
Thanks,
Jack.
It's great to see you. I'm not sure I've ever had you both on at the same time. I think we've had you individually in the past, but I should mention that you're both El Paso expats, and you've been living and working in L.A. for a number of years now. You graduated from USC.
Correct.
The program is...
Scoring for Motion Picture and Television.
It's a long title. But
yeah,
it's
otherwise known as the very unhelpful acronym SMPTV.
I hope that's on your diploma, too. Did you think
it's
when
a
you were...
fold-out diploma. But,
I'm sure the focus, I know from when you were in school, the focus was mainly on film composing and television. But while you were in school, did you ever think that video games would be such a large... part of what composers are working on now musically?
You know, it's funny. Dave and I went through the program a year apart, and in that 1 year, there was way more of an emphasis on what video game composing could be. They did a little bit of, I mean, they introduced it and they said, guys, this is a really great industry. It's growing. It's fun. Yeah. You should think about it. And then by the next year, they had an entire class.
Like, no, you should do this.
Yeah. Right. No, seriously.
And that was like 2005, 6, 7?
Yeah, 2006, 7 is when they started instituting a game component. And actually, that's where I first hooked up with the guys that would later become the company that we've done so much work with, The Odd Gentleman. So I scored my first student game that became a first real game while at USC.
Networking in any part of the film industry is so important, and a lot of that starts in school. I know you guys are probably working with a lot of the film students there, too, that were having to make their own films. But then link you also with the part of the school that's in gaming?
They did. They kind of threw us into the interactive department is what it was called. And so we kind of made inroads there.
Yeah, they even say that sometimes that these relationships that you're making outside of the curriculum can be even more important than the work that you're doing. It's not every time, but you know the administration recognizes that, so they look for that.
They synergize all those departments.
And I think that that's the greatest strength of the program, actually, which is not necessarily curriculum, although it's very good. It's those connections. And I mean, I learned more just scoring short films and games than I did sitting in a class listening to someone talk about it abstractly.
Right.
Yeah. To put in a plug, if somebody is interested in writing music and aren't quite sure what to do with that interest, go to USC's website and look at what, you know, their materials about that program. It's incredible.
Well, as you both know, I'm not a big video game guy. I have of a certain age where I don't play video games, and I
think
you
mentioned Galaga.
You did,
which is still a classic.
Asteroids, or
and your love of the storyline, I believe.
That's right. But I have children, and walking through the house every day, I have watched over that same period of time you're talking about, 2005, 6, 7, and beyond. Just this amazing increase in the cinematic rendering of these games, the lengthening duration of them, the complicated storylines that they're building into them. And is that kind of what's driving sort of this golden age of music for video games, is that the game platforms are at a stage where they're becoming very cinematic and broad in their storytelling capabilities, and therefore there's much more demand for a more three-dimensional music environment?
I don't know what your take on this, Ben, is, but my take is that actually if there's any sort of progress in the golden age of music, which I would agree there is it's due to the memory ceiling. I mean, even when I was first starting, we had a memory ceiling. I had to get all of my tracks underneath a certain megabyte component. Like, I had 2 megabytes to play with. And now, on the new stuff we're working on, we don't really even have functional ceilings, which means that we can do actual recordings of people and put them in. So the ability to do more than just a really rough MIDI file is, I think, has done more than anything to.
So there is an important computer processing component to this
right.
that's allowed for not just amazing three-dimensional rendering of graphics, but has expanded the amount of space
right.
you guys can play with.
Right. And the other thing is that every game is, you know, meant to be an immersive experience.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the more music, the more emotional, the more bombastic, usually the better. Whereas film, you know, you're telling different stories. You want to be subtle. You don't want it to hit you over the head nearly as much.
Games want to have you hit other people over the head.
Exactly. Exactly.
And interactively.
And shoot them in the gut sometimes.
Just how you interact with people in the game world.
Well, I'm wondering then, since you work in television, film, and video games extensively, do you have to kind of redirect your focus when you move, shift between those types of media?
Yeah, I mean, things are different, and you can't approach everything in the exact same way, or it's just going to get stale.
Well, you were mentioning, and we've talked about this on previous shows with you guys, is that, you know, oftentimes in the film scoring world, you're not wanting to be obvious. You're wanting to work emotionally and subjectively on an audience, but not to the point where they're aware. Whereas in, I think, David, you just said, you know, in video games, sometimes it's a little more overt what the music is doing.
Yeah.
Also, the delivery is different. So sometimes you do want to be seen and not heard. You know, you're doing an ambient track, and you don't know how long a character is going to spend in the forest that you're scoring, so you write a 2 to 4 minute ambient cue, which loops at the beginning and the end.
Yeah.
So this cue could go on for infinity, and you don't want to have that, you know, become mind-numbingly bad. But then you'll have a cutscene where you want to be dramatic and you want to be old-school film score, and so you get to step out. So there's actually a lot of different ways you can go about it.
That brings me to an interesting point you just made, which is, unlike a film score, with video games, you may be immersed in that day after day after day with that music.
Yeah. That is something that's on our minds every time we sit down to write for video games.
Yeah. If you do it wrong, it could be maddening.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And things that, you know, things that sound good when you hear them once will become the most obnoxious thing when you've heard it, you know, by the thousandth time. So we try to be very sensitive to that.
Do you approach it like originally as a film score would, where you're thinking in terms of themes for characters or places that would psychologically weave into the narrative, or is there a different approach?
Well, our last game, actually, each character had a theme in a very overt way. It was kind of like our version of Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah. We were intentionally going for Prokofiev on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And which game was that?
That is the game called Wayward Manor. Mm-hmm. It's available now on Steam, which is a PC and Mac gaming platform.
Ask your kids.
Yeah, ask your kids.
Steam is apparently the site, right?
It is.
Finding
yeah.
these things. And you were telling me that's a game that's been worked on by Neil Gaiman.
He wrote the story.
Wow.
Yeah, it was initially a Kickstarter that he started up and then kind of molded into a game with a developer and a publisher and all that. But it's a lovable story where you are the ghost of a manor, and you are trying to Beetlejuice-esque haunt the people out of your
kind of
abode.
An old dark house.
Yeah. With a nice comic twist to it.
This was Neil Gaiman's first game. That he
which is crazy because his name is Gaiman. Am I right?
Right.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes to show that, you know, the forward-thinking game companies are really branching out and trying to tell new and different stories that haven't been told in games before. This isn't Castlevania. This is a totally new ghost story kind of game.
And when I at least wander through my house and see what's being played by my kids, it's amazing the range of, it's like film. There are genres, there are settings, there are period games that are set in the past and history or science fiction or horror. And I guess you have to be able to pivot like that as well, just like with a film.
There are episodic games now.
Yeah.
Much in the way that, you know, there are episodes in TV, there are now episodic games.
I know gaming has also expanded off consoles, meaning beyond the PS3. PS3 and 4 and right. the Xbox, mm-hmm. and you're working on a number of games that you just download right to your computer, or nowadays we walk around with computers on our hips, the smartphone.
Right.
What proportion is that of your work?
We've done a lot of games for iOS and for mobile, and I think the reason is it's an exploding platform. Everybody's got it. The proportion of people who have a smartphone to people who have a PS4 is not even close. So there's a big push for mobile games, and just because it's mobile doesn't mean it's necessarily an inexpensive thing either. I think Clash of Clans is a very popular game, and people spend – they'll spend $1 every couple days in order to refresh their purple goop so that you can
right.
do the thing. That's a pretty expensive right. game when it comes down to it. You can spend $30-$60 pretty easily.
Hmm. And yeah. the rendering of those is also expanding because our smartphones have all sorts of memory and capabilities now, processing power.
Right.
But not necessarily the speakers.
It right. is,
yeah.
It is a little
you want
bit
good headphones
of a
to hear your music
thing
correctly.
To spend yeah. all of this time and energy and effort to make this brilliant score, and then it's played on an iPhone.
Do you two have time to play video games?
Yeah.
Other
well,
than the
yeah.
ones you're working on?
We were gamers as kids, and then the more that we invested in music, I think that the more gaming went by the wayside. But these days I'm playing games just to kind of keep up with the industry.
Yeah, it's true. I don't get as much time as maybe I'd like to, and it seems like research sometimes when I play.
Yeah.
My youngest son Joseph is really not just into gaming, but he follows the industry. It's yeah. fascinating. He's yeah. on all these blogs and he's reading about.
Yeah, he knows more than I do.
It's pretty extraordinary for a 13-year-old, but he's begun collecting on CD video game scores. It seems like the recognition of video game composers is being elevated right now, too.
Yeah.
Totally agree. And for a lot of the reasons I think we've talked about before, the field, your ability to write is expanded. When you first started games, let's take Mario, you had three waveforms that you could write with. A square wave, a triangle wave, a sawtooth wave, and white noise, when shortened, made your percussion and your sound effects. And that's what you had to work with.
Yeah.
And so they had a very cheap synthesizing engine that you could algebraically program these waveforms in, and now you're recording entire symphonies. So it has come as far as you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, and in fact, to kind of get into a little industry stuff, the Musicians Union is kind of in a battle over trying to get a good contract because they recognize how important the gaming industry is for.
And it's a new world.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, these are the growing pains of an industry right now.
Right.
Well, it's always great to see you two, and unique, I'm sure, within the industry to have two brothers collaborating on this work. So I'm so glad we could catch you and get you in the studio on your visit to El Paso.
Thanks for having us in.
Yeah, thanks, Chuck.
I've been discussing the rise in quality and respect that video game music has seen in the last few years with David and Ben Stanton, film and video game composers and El Paso expats who've been living and working in L.A. for most of the last decade. Their work can be heard on the current release of the video game Wayward Manor from The Odd Gentleman, available now on Steam. For more of the work of David and Ben Stanton, log on to thebrothersstanton.com. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.